right. Sidham.
Sidham.
By the inhabitants of Siddhaloka.
By the inhabitants of Siddhaloka.
Charana.
Charana.
The inhabitants of Charanaloka.
The inhabitants of Charanaloka.
Gandharvahai.
Gandharvahai.
The inhabitants of Gandharvaloka.
The inhabitants of Gandharvaloka.
Vidyadhara.
Vidyadhara.
The inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka.
The inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka.
Mahaurgahe.
Mahaurgahe.
The inhabitants of the serpent Loka.
The inhabitants of the serpent Loka.
Kinarahai.
Kinarahai.
The Kinaras.
The Kinaras.
Apsarobihi.
Apsarobihi.
The Apsaras.
The Apsaras.
Cha.
And
Kridatbihi.
Kridatbihi.
Who are engaged in sporting.
Who are engaged in sporting.
Jushta.
Jushta.
Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Kandara.
Kandara.
The caves.
The caves.
Translation. The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kinnaras, and Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. So we repeat. The inhabitants of the higher planets.
The inhabitants of the higher planets.
The Siddhas, Charanas.
The Siddhas, Charanas.
Gandharvas, Vidyadharas.
Serpents,
Kinnaras, and Apsaras go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves of the mountain are full of these denizens
of the heavenly planets.
So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As ordinary men may play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of the Trikuta mountain. It's hard to imagine someone water skiing in the ocean of milk. Anyway, somehow they're doing that. So this is short purport, so we're just going to read the next text for this purport. Text 6. Yatra sangita sanadair nadadguhamamashayai abhigarjanti haraya slaghina para shankhya. Because of these resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring in that way. So Srila Prabhupada explains that in the higher planetary systems there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees and the land is made of emeralds. Such is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, in this regard, Keshava Tuya Jagata Vichitra. My Lord Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties of other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second canto, the third chapter, text 19, Svavid varahosta karai samstha prusha pasuhu. Materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, and they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must take knowledge from a perfect person like Shukadeva Goswami. Mahajano yena gata sapantaha. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajanas. There are 12 Mahajanas, and Shukadeva Goswami is one of them. Svayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumara Kupilo Manabhu Pralaru Janako Bhishmo Valir Vayasakir Vayam. Vayasaki is Shukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says we consider to be factual. That is perfect knowledge. So, Om Maganatu Vranda Shagman Jana Shlakya Chakshur and many times Yena Tasmai Shiva Namaha. Of course, yesterday we also spoke about how there's many dimensions in this universe that we, and especially the scientists, don't have access to. And that's one reason why they don't understand that there's life on other planets. And another reason I gave was that probably as an example that Prabhupada gave is that the living entities in other planets, being higher than we are, have the ability to block their access to that particular location or that particular planet. And another reason, even from a scientific perspective, is that scientists are thinking that if there is life, it must exist in a similar way to the life that we have on this Earth planet. In other words, let's get a little more scientific. Life on this planet is based upon something called carbon. Now, carbon, of course, you know, something is has carbon and carbon compounds. There's a study of chemistry called organic chemistry. Organic chemistry means the chemistry of life, things to do with life, or predecessors to life, or some way connected with life. And so organic chemistry is quite different than inorganic chemistry. Inorganic chemistry is quite simple. You know, like, inorganic would be like two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen makes water. But in organic chemistry, you've got these really complex molecules. And if a molecule even has... Molecules is a combination of atoms, in case those of you don't know. So, and they're structured in a certain way. And if the molecules even have the same atoms in them, but they're just a little reversed, it has an opposite effect. So it's really a complex thing. And of course, that also is very, very artistic and proves the existence of a designer. Yesterday I was seeing on the internet, there was one geneticist who is an artist at the same time who draws pictures of what's happening in the cell. And these are so interesting, so complex pictures. In any case, getting back to the point, is that scientists generally think life has to be based on carbon, or a compound of carbon, organic compound of carbon. And they don't... And so when they take their spaceships and their rovers... You've heard of this. Maybe they have these rovers which are unmanned, like a car with little scientific instruments on. You've heard of this? Have you heard of this before? Like they have the Mars rover, and they have the rover on. I think they even went to another planet. But anyway, the moon, of course, and it drives there, drills into the soil, it sees if there's any water, it sees if there's any carbon or any ice, things like that. And if they discover like ice or water, they think, this is ideal for life. But they're just thinking of life as they know it. There might be life based upon other compounds, or other elements, sorry. Or there may be more subtle life. There may be elements that we don't even know about. In fact, there are elements that we don't even know about, because as the scientists delve into matter, they come up with more and more elements, and they have a table of elements like that. It's called a periodic table, based upon how many electrons and protons and neutrons a particular element has. For example, you know, hydrogen, which is called the lightest element, just has one electron, one neutron, one proton. I'm not going to get into science anymore, don't worry. So, anyway, so they're basing it upon their particular way of understanding. And when you don't have a knowledge of something different than your particular way of understanding, you tend not to see anything else. There was one psychological experiment that was done that when people in a deserted island, you know, people have never seen anything else other than what was on their island. It wasn't deserted because they've been living there. Then if they saw something in the sea, like a big boat, they could not recognize it, or practically couldn't even see it, because if there's something there that just like it's beyond your knowledge, beyond your ability to understand, you won't even see it. And what to speak if you don't have even the innate sensual capacity to perceive that particular object? I mean, for example, we don't have the innate sensual capacity to perceive radio signals and television signals and microwaves and all these cosmic rays and things like that that are here in this room. You know, there's actually cosmic rays bombarding us. There's tiny little insects that are floating around. Some of them are on the garland. Those I can see. You know, I have the ability to see those. And there's been so many things in this room that, you know, that are going on, both life and non-life things that are going on. And we just don't have the ability to see these things. And if you have the right instruments, you can perceive these things. So that's basically why the scientists, you know, can't see these things going on the other planets. And they think Earth is unique. It's the only planet with life. Maybe we'll discover some other planet we can move to after we destroy this planet. And, you know, there are even people who are taking reservations for one-way tickets to Mars right now. I don't know if you heard about this. One-way ticket to Mars, you know, and Mars is actually, for people of our constitution, is practically uninhabitable for a variety of reasons. And what to speak of Venus, which is actually far more warm, which you don't have any problems with the cold there. Because it's so hot, probably in some places you're going to need to melt metal in Venus, on Venus. So they're actually taking one-way, selling one-way tickets, you know. And, you know, people are just thinking, you know, it's better somewhere else. You know, that's another point, that we hear about these heavenly planets and we become very attracted to it. Just like we hear about different places on this Earth planet that are somehow or other more attractive or appear to be more attractive. Just as, like yesterday I was communicating with one disciple in Hawaii, Mayapur, and he was talking about stopping there on a way to Fiji or something like that. And just, you know, it's so beautiful, you hear the birds chirping and everything like that. So we hear about these things and our mind becomes attracted. But we don't understand that, first of all, we take our mind with us wherever we go. That's a big problem. If we could leave our mind behind, maybe it would be kind of nice. We could leave our mind and body behind. Of course, you can if you go to the spiritual world or even the higher planets. You can leave, can't leave your mind behind. You can leave your body behind, your gross body behind. So, if you hear it's very attractive, what to speak of this, you know, you're having fun in the ocean of milk. I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, as I mentioned before, maybe they're jet skiing there or something in the ocean of milk, and it's not like the salt ocean. You know, you have to swallow it. It's just like pretty obnoxious swallowing salt water. But if you swallow the water in the ocean of milk, it's kind of nice. And, you know, milk, curd, and everything like that. And then there's nice animals around there. Just like people nowadays, in order to see these animals, they go to Africa. I have one uncle who paid like $30,000 to go on safari just to see the tigers and lions and things like that. So there's this desire to go somewhere else, to see something else, because one is dissatisfied where they are, which is part of the material world. Actually, wherever we are, we're going to be dissatisfied as long as we're taking shelter of matter. So, therefore, when I read this, it appears, you know, pretty nice. The beaches are covered with small gems resembling grains of sand. The other day I was talking to devotees about the pink sand in the Bahamas. You know, I used to go to the Bahamas. It's really beautiful. Water is clear as crystal. It's like a Bahamas water. Anyone's been to the Bahamas? The Caribbean. Of course, you're in the Caribbean. You know that. The water is completely clear. And you get these beautiful demigod damsels bathing in it. Of course, in the sannyasi, I'm not attracted to that. But and the water becomes fragrant, and there's a beautiful breeze. I said, wow, let me go there. These people must be really happy. However, there's a problem. That the people there are not really happy. Because basically, when you have all that sort of sense gratification, then you still want more. As described in the Gita, Avatam Gyanam Etena Gyanam Manchibayana Kama Rupena Kontiya Dushprena Lendacha. So it never satisfies, it burns like fire. So you have the demigods like Indra, who's the head of this whole thing. And Indra certainly has access to all these places, gets to see all these beautiful girls dancing in front of him, you know, practically every day. Actually, it's an interesting explanation that was given by Hrina Nandamaraj the other day. You know, why do they have these girls dancing in front of them in the heavenly planets? Well, that's because they need some, like, break, you know, because they're engaged in management. They're actually, Indra is not just watching dancing girls all day long. He has to manage, you know, he's managing many of the other demigods. He's like the head of the administrative demigods. So, you know, he has a lot of work. So when you have a lot of work, you got to take a break sometime. And the break is, you know, musical interlude in the middle of the work day. So that's passion. You know, in goodness, you don't really need a break. In goodness, your whole life is a break. You know, you're chanting, you're worshiping the deities. It's just like, wow. Someone who you just like happy going from one thing to another. Just like I was thinking this morning that, you know, I woke up, oh, I get to go to Mangalarati, then I get to go to hear about Krishna, read from Srimad Bhagavatam, then I get to do my Didi Puja, and then I get to do take prasadam, of course. Then I get to answer all the emails I got. And so, you know, you can look at it in a negative way. You can say, I have to do that. Or you get to say, it's how you phrase it. You could say, I get to do it. I get to do it. And if you're doing it with a spirit of devotion, then all these things are extremely pleasant. I mean, even the emails with so many different managerial, and you think, I'm doing it for my spiritual master. And it's out of devotion. I'm choosing to do it for my spiritual master. So anyway, but Indra and the demigods, they need breaks from time to time. So that's, therefore, they have this recreational activities going on. However, in spite of all that, they're agitated. You would think, you know, give me this, you give me that, and I won't be agitated anymore. I'll just be peaceful. Of course, the statement of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kam Sakalaya Shanta Krishna Bhakti Nij Kam Atayeva Shanta. As long as one desires bhukti, anything in this world, or mukti, or liberation, or city, or powers, or anything like that, then one will not be happy. One will be ashanta. So we see with Indra, for example, let's take the example of Indra, that Indra is so ashanta that even though he has all these beautiful girls, denizens, you know, bathing, he's so agitated he gets lusty after earth girls from time to time. He goes after Ahalya, Gotama Rishi's wife, and he, you know, puts on the guise of Gotama Rishi to have a relationship with Ahalya, to trick Ahalya, and he didn't get away with it, of course. And, you know, then it shows that he's just not satisfied. He's just not satisfied. You know, there's many examples, you know, of him getting agitated. Of course, the Krishna book story, 10th canto story of Indra, getting upset because he just didn't get his puja. It's like a guru who's sitting on the Vyasasana and says, you know, I need my daily puja. I remember, actually, I don't know if I mentioned, but I remember in the early days when after Prabhupada left the planet, you know, some of the gurus, they were just like addicted to their daily puja. You know, when do I get my puja? you get worshipped. Even myself, I can't say I was addicted, but it was Sunday. Every Sunday we would have it. Remember, we'd have this puja, the cookie throw, and everything like that. So Indra is very addicted to his worship. I mean, what does he need? He has the heavenly planets and all these things. So just because the residents of Braj didn't, you know, worship him and offer a few little things to him, you know, then he gets all bent out of shape. And he tries to kill them. I mean, doesn't that indicate that there's no real happiness there? Because if someone didn't worship me, because we're chanting Hare Krishna, I would just say, all right, Hare Krishna. Because the real happiness is within. But we are looking, and the demigods are generally looking for the happiness without all the variety in the material world. Because we do need variety. But the variety should come from within. I mean, from Krishna Katha. Like sometimes we look at the newspaper to see the variety in the material world, but it's not real variety. It's actually the same old, same old. And, you know, what's the latest? We go on this, we have this app on our phone that amalgamates all the different news sites. You understand? It takes from all the different news sites. And so it has like different categories. So it has like political category, science category. So sometimes I look at the science category and the technology category just to see what's the latest, you know, toy that you can get. So the latest, the greatest and the latest. And so we're looking for all this different variety externally, and it's just making us more agitated. So we should look for the variety internally, and that variety internally is based on bhakti or devotion. Because when one is in love, even in the material world, then you tend not to even see the variety of the external variety of the material world, isn't it? And when you find someone who's like, of course, love in this material world is lust, and it just doesn't last for that long. But let's say someone is falling in love and really wants to be with the person, please the person, everything like that. Or a mother. Let's say a mother. That actually is a little bit more elevated. Let's say a mother. She really just loves her little child. Everything the child does, thinking of the child 24 hours a day. She can undergo so many austerities, not interested so much in the varieties of this world. She can't travel so much anymore because she has a little baby that she has to take care of. Because it's love. So love ultimately is the internal, the love of Krishna, the love of the spiritual master, and the love of the Vaishnavas, and ultimately the love of all living entities, is actually the point that enables us not to be interested in the variety of this world. Because, I mean, the love, the spiritual love for Krishna has endless variety to it, has endless variety in the spiritual world. I mean, just like we read some of the writings of the Acharyas, like Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur and Narottamadas Thakur and other personalities. I mean, some people say that the stories that they make up are not real stories, but actually their stories are real because internally they're interacting with Krishna. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita, for example, we have this whole story, two stories, of Narada Muni looking for the best devotee of the Lord. And you have Gopakumara looking for the perfect situation that fits his particular nature. And so some people say, well, these are just like stories to illustrate the Siddhanta. But actually, when a Vaishnava writes stories like this, they're experiencing that particular exchange with Krishna. So we have so many varieties of Vaishnava literatures that deal with the pastimes of Krishna that are just so interesting. And just like Bhagavatam, Gita, all these different literatures, we have no need to look for all these different varieties that are being described in the heavenly planets or varieties in this world. We don't have to go see the Eiffel Tower in Paris. We don't have to go see what else? The Harbour Bridge in Sydney or the churches in Italy. You know, when we go around the world, people want to take us to all these different places, all the changing of the guards. at Buckingham Palace. Who cares about some funny-looking people that are just changing guards, changing with each other, or the Big Ben, some big clock? I already have a watch. What do I need a big clock for? So, anyway, so this is really the point. This is really the point. And you'll see that Gajendra the elephant, later on in this chapter, is in Maya, in this nice place. And elephants there are not like dumb elephants in this world. The elephants there, they're actually, you know, quite conscious, able to pray, as we're going to hear later on. And still, he's not happy. He's just like... And Krishna makes the arrangement to show him about the temporary nature of this world. So, that's Krishna's special mercy. So, these are some of the points. It says that we could derive here. And, just the final point the Prabhupada makes is that even though these descriptions may appear to be, like, impossible, and we're incredulous about these descriptions, we accept the opinion of the higher authorities like Shukadeva Goswami, who is able to perceive these higher dimensions of reality. When these great Vaishnavas write, they're actually perceiving, like Valmiki Muni, when he wrote the Ramayana, he perceived in his heart the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. So these are not simply imaginative descriptions of these great acharyas. So, any questions or comments about any of these points? Yeah.
And when we first read, when you talked about the heavenly people that would go there to sport,
yeah,
how come the serpents were listed?
That's interesting. Yeah, I noted that too. Well, the serpents are not necessarily bad. These are not demoniac serpents. Actually, there's many good nagas. You have Vasuki, who's actually quite good, and Anantashesh, or Shesh, is quite good. So they go to the heavenly planets too. So it's not that they're all like Takshagas. Doesn't mention Takshagas there. But they're actually nice serpents. I mean, why not? They're all these living entities. It's just like, almost you can compare it to one of these Walt Disney movies, where you have, you know, the lions and the tigers, and everyone's living very, very nicely together, like kumbaya. Because there's no indication here that the lions are eating the heavenly denizens. Mm-hmm. Or the serpents are biting the heavenly denizens. There's no indication. I mean, the lions also were envious, which is described in this verse we read today, but so are the demigods. You know, in the heavenly planets, there is envy. I mean, they sometimes steal each other's wives. You know, Brihaspati's wife was stolen by Soma one time. You remember that story? I mean, they steal each other. Can you imagine? You think, you know, this only happens in low-class Earth planet. Well, it happens in heavenly planets, too. Because there's lust, anger, greed. I mean, illusion, envy, all these things are there. The inert is there in a more sophisticated way. It doesn't matter that they have more facility. They still have the same inertness. Just like before I joined the movement, I thought, you know, let me go to Europe and discover culture. And so I went to Europe, and there was a more cultured way of expressing anarthas in Europe. You know, America is just like in your face, basically. You know, they don't have it. When they eat, they don't care what fork they use, what knife they use, or what hand they use. And the Europeans, they have this very, you know, finesse. They have a certain fork. They have two forks. One is a cake fork. One is a meat fork, or whatever. There's a butter knife and a meat knife. And it's just like, I guess you have to go to school to learn all these things. But, you know, Americans, they don't care. They'll just pick up any damn thing and shove it in their mouths. So anyway, it's more sophisticated there. So I went there thinking that sophistication was actually more elevated, but then I realized very quickly that sophistication was just like the same old, just